Hi, this is Dick Cavett, and guess what? You're listening to WGN Radio. I wouldn't kid you. And I looked up at the monitor, and I saw, the prompter thing that was rolling, and told me to get ready to bring on Elmer Bursby, the ant expert. And instead of saying my next guest is an ant expert, I said, okay, Cavett, you're back. Go. No show is complete without an ant expert. And that got my first big laugh ever, and I cherish it to this day.
Hey, this is Michael with WGN Radio here in Chicago, and I'm sitting down with my good friend Dick and Rob. It's good to see you both. How's South by Southwest going today?
Today is the big day for us. The movie premieres tonight, and we're pretty excited about it.
Yeah, me too. I didn't realize it was tonight, but I'm very happy to know that it is, because I can get jet lag from walking across the street. So I'm here from New York, having missed a snowstorm of 21 inches by inches. And I'm sorry I missed it, but I'm glad to be here.
Speaking of snow and maybe some warmer feelings, Mr. Cavett, I heard that you're going to be selling your house in Montauk, and I know that that's a very close memory that you had, a lot of warm memories from there, and I was wondering, what are some of the warm memories that you had from that place? And I know it had a great connection to your heart.
What would be your definition of a warm memory?
Something that makes you happy when you're feeling blue, something you look back and you think, oh, that was a good time.
Wait a minute. I thought of one, and I'm sorry to interrupt you like that, but
okay.
I don't want to let it slip from my malleable mind. Muhammad Ali, you know, the famous fighter, he stayed in my house one night in Montauk, and that was the best night there, I think, of all the wonderful people who had been there. He was... the least likely, I suppose. He was shooting a documentary. I knew him because he'd been on my show, of course. I knew him. And we had become really good friends. That's a kind of mysterious aspect of my life. Is there something with bro in it that is used as an expression for bromance? He was shooting a documentary out there, and they're having a terrible time with him, and he wouldn't talk, and he wouldn't listen, and he just stood on a cliff and looked out to the sea, and they sent me over to see if I could do any good. Mm-hmm. And I did. The minute he saw me, he changed totally from depression, so it can't have been the real thing, mm-hmm. but he just brightened up, and they said, Jesus, what the... power you have over him. He's just fine now. And when that was over shooting, I said, why don't you stay at my house? It's just down the road. And he said, all right, but I don't think my mother will ever believe me if I stayed in Dick Cavett's house. So I took him there, put him in the big bed. I figured, a three-time heavyweight champion, you want a big bed for. And went to get his wife from the motel. And while I was gone, the phone rang. It was my wife calling from New York, and she heard hello and said, darling? And he said, this ain't darling. It's the only three-time heavyweight champion in the world, and I'm lying in your bed, and I'm watching your TV. And she was hip enough, fortunately, to say, well, Mr. Ali, I will see that a plaque is put on that bed. Which is more than she ever offered for me, but anyway.
That's so great. So let's talk a little bit about that connection to Muhammad Ali. You have the new film coming out, Ali Cavett, The Tale of the Tapes. I'm looking at this gorgeous poster you have right here. You have this intrinsic ability to connect with people. How did this relationship come to be? It seems a little bit out of the ordinary, you and Ali.
Not so much, really. When you think of it, our backgrounds were almost exactly the same. And I just thought, here's a brother. Seriously, folks, I don't know, but it was like we hit it off, an old expression. Do they still say that? We clicked in some way. We bonded strongly, and all these dumb phrases don't describe it at all, of course, but we just... I think whenever we thought of each other, we grinned, and whenever we saw each other, we laughed and had a good time. I don't know. Well, it's pretty hard not to not only have admiration and but affection for this incredible, oh Lord, what's his name uses that word, this fantastic, that's another one, this meeting with a person who is so profoundly brilliant in his physical way, in his mental way, just everything you want in somebody is in him. Mm-hmm. But though I know other people who have those too, except for three-time heavyweight, you know. It's something special, just two soul brothers, I guess. I don't want to get too corny about it. It sounds like a deep romance, and I don't want to mislead anybody.
Well, I like that, and it really shows through on the trailers that I watched, and it's just a cool coming together. Mr. Batter, you're directing the film. What made you want to take this kind of film on?
Well, I work with the Cavett Show Archives, and I looked at all these Ali shows, and I thought there was something really special and unique about their interplay and their relationship. And then in 2012, Dick wrote a couple of columns about his friendship with Ali, and that sort of was the last push I needed to get started on it. And I just think there's something really unusual about when their friendship happened and just who these two guys were, and also what Ali was going through at the time when they started doing all these interviews. For him to evolve from the guy who first came on, you know, as a proponent of the Nation of Islam, having just lost his title, going through the Supreme Court situation with, you know, trying to get his boxing license back, stay out of jail. He wasn't getting a lot of media opportunity, and the Cavett Show gave him a pretty wide open forum, and Dick gave him a pretty fair shake, which I think might have helped form the friendship. I think Ali was pleasantly surprised that here's a guy who's letting me say this stuff, and he's not fighting me and arguing about it. He's letting me say my piece, and we're having a good discussion. I think those early shows helped form what would become a really warm friendship. It's fun to watch that evolve as you watch the interviews. You go deeper and deeper.
Yeah, it's so cool because I was a little bit young when your TV show was on.
Younger.
No, I don't think I was born just yet, but I go back and I watch, and I'm, you know, my dad and I, we would speak about it all the time. WGN Radio has a great connection with you as well. Your show is mentioned many times because we have a listenership which is, you know, from that age.
Proper. Perfect age.
The perfect age. The
people who remember the 60s and 70s listen to WGN.
Yes. That's a great soundbite, by the way.
Feel free to use it.
And, you know, looking back, I saw just this great connection you had with your guests, where you didn't interview them. You had more of a conversation with them. And I myself tried to...
I'm patting you on the shoulder for saying that, because it's strange. Jack Parr... Now, do you have to Google that name?
I know a little bit about him.
Yeah. He was star of The Tonight Show, and I wrote for him, and later had him on my show, and we remained friends till he died. But he called me just before my first show on ABC, a day or two before, and he said, "Kid, whatever you do," and I'm eagerly listening, "whatever you do, don't do interviews." And I thought, what's left? Singing, reading to the guests, wrestling, arm wrestling. And he said, no, just don't do interviews. That's Q&A. And what's your favorite this? And David Frost falling asleep in front of his clipboard. And just don't do interviews. Make it a conversation. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much the best advice you can get.
Yeah, and Jack Parr gave you that advice.
Yeah, great Jack Parr. And at first I had to remember it and not get too stuck to my notes, you know, and that always looks bad.
Yes, because you want to make the connection that you have, and there's no way that you can get to the nitty-gritty of what the person's about unless you get to know them. Yeah. How did you make that initial connection? How did you make the interviewee feel warm and be able to speak to you in a more open fashion? Is there any secrets or?
I don't know. You know, people feel I'm shunning them or cheating them when I don't have a good answer for that, because I guess I don't think in those terms, and yet I've been asked about it so much. I do know one thing that finally hit me. I would have hit a smarter person even sooner. I had done talk shows as a guest a good bit before I ever hosted one. Never dreamed of hosting one. Never wanted to, in the sense that it just never seemed like anything within the realm of possibility. But I had been a guest, so I knew how it felt to sit there and have the host maybe stumble for a moment, or and as a guest, you could bail them out. You could tell when they were uncomfortable with things they were trying to bring up and word, and I would word it for them. And this all sounds rather condescending, but it's true. There's a lot you can learn from having done the thing that you are later going to do to other people. That's not a sex reference.
I like that. I like that a lot. And Mr. Batter, did you see that coming through with his interviews? Because you know, I'm sure, the most extensively about Mr. Cavett's career and everything.
There's
so
nothing that Bader hasn't seen come true.
I've seen probably more episodes of the Dick Cavett Show than anyone else. I've spent a lot of time working on that archive. And the Ali stuff is very, very different. I mean, he's great with a lot of guests. He really has this thing where he seems very interested in the person, whether it's, you know, someone like Ronald Reagan or whether it's the ant expert. Equal interest. Cavett really wants to know what's going on with this guy, no matter who it is. And that's what I think makes it really work. And it's not to say that Ronald Reagan's more interesting than the ant expert. On any given day, Elmer Bursby might be the best guest you had. But there's a respect and an honesty there where he seems so interested in whatever the person has been brought on the show to talk about. And it's not like he's falling asleep while the guy's answering and just going to his next question. It's reactive. When the guy says something that he didn't know was coming, the next question builds on that. And I think that's what makes the show so different than the other talk shows.
Speaking of that, Elmer Bursby, is that the ant guy?
Ant expert, yes.
Isn't that the perfect James Thurber name for a character? This is when I first thought I might be able to hack this job. It was either the first or second day, and I was still pretty stiff. He was a nice old fellow. He was a real ant expert. And he had those frames, you know, that are white sand inside. They're flat, and the ants have made their tunnels in them, and you get to love your ants. And
don't give it all away. He's our next film.
Oh, wait, okay, never mind.
Introspective look into
Elmer Bursby, the Ant Man.
So that's really funny, because looking back on your career, and you've spoken to so many, the most amazing people like of all time, Alfred Hitchcock, you talked to Jimi Hendrix and all these guys, and then the Ant Expert. What is it about bringing this kind of person like Jimi Hendrix and humanizing him?
Did I?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, I remember thinking I won't come off well with Hendrix, because unlike Ali and me, we don't have the same background as Jimi Hendrix. Frivolously, folks, again. I thought I would love to make Hendrix laugh. And here he is sitting in his sort of flouncy blue silk shirt and ribbon for a belt, and I don't remember what he had the waist down on. And I thought, well, here's two things. I thought half the rednecks in the audience are thinking, who's this with his guitar? And so I made a point of saying, ask him a question that he had to answer, having been a member of the 110th Airborne Division Parachute Squad.
He was in the parachute squad.
Yeah, okay. He was a big parachuter. And I could see people gasp. Yeah. What's Cavett crazy? Look at what he... And then the other thing was, I just said, kind of having run out of things to say for the mere moment, I said, do you like to... Do you get up in the morning and really try to get some work done and each day and so on? And he said, I try to get up in the morning... Big, big laugh. I think we became buddies with that laugh.
I love that. And I'm so excited to see the film, Ali and Kevitt, Tale of the Tapes. Now, Muhammad Ali, he was an outspoken guy, I guess you could say that, fair to say. And he had a great phrase, fight like a butterfly, sting like a bee. Do you have a catchphrase yourself?
I use that one most of the time yeah. because there are so many young people today who don't know what a butterfly is that I used to know who invented that phrase for him, really. It was somebody who was with him, a trainer, maybe?
I think Bundini Brown.
Bundini.
Came up with float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. And they used to just say it together and, like, just kind of do a dance or something. There was a really theatrical little bit they did for all the reporters at training camp.
Wow, really?
Yeah. That's it's a wonderful phrase. And you can pretty much figure someone's age by asking them, do you know what this means?
You've lived such an extremely important life, and I'm sure you get this all the time. But what would you want to tell your younger self about this extraordinary experience in life that you're going to be living? Is there any advice you'd give to yourself when you were younger?
Wow. I feel like my younger self. Mm-hmm. So,
you get to watch your younger self on television, though.
Like hell. Yeah, I do. Mr. Bader reminds me of this, that I have a unique position in life of being able to see my life decades earlier. And it's me. It is I. And I don't see any difference in my appearance between then and now.
Different hairstyles, at least.
Sometimes that's painful, because there'll be a shot of me, and I am so gorgeous in it, you know, it could just eat me up with a spoon. And then I go upstairs and look in the mirror, and the face of the late Maria Uspenskaya looks back at me from the mirror. And that's hard. But seriously, oddly, often I will sit there watching me and, let's say, Sidney Poitier or... And a strange thought will be, I would love to meet him or have met him. Wait a minute. There we are together. I did. I'm not even sure if before I watched that show on Decades recently, I would have been able to answer the question, did you ever have him on? But you will find that happens. You forget guests. One night I was on Johnny's show, and during the break, when he had the band play loud so he didn't have to talk to the guests during the breaks, he gave Doc a shush a little to wrote down. He said, Richard, did you ever forget your guests? And I said, oh, well, yeah, after there have been 500 of them, you start. No, I mean that night. And he kind of drew his fingers over his across his forehead and like worry and sweat, and I said, I'm not sure how you mean. He said, well, I went home the other night. I kind of do his voice, don't I? I went home the other night, and the doorman said, who'd you have on tonight, Mr. Carson? And I said, I'd rather he had an Irish doorman. We always have four guests. We had and he said, and I couldn't think of any of them, of the four. Mm-hmm. Looking back, I didn't see anything. I couldn't think of any of the guests. And I liked him so much, and I wanted him to feel good, and this was true. I said, I had a case of that. I went home from one of my 90-minute shows. Mm-hmm. Somebody said, how'd it go? I said, okay. And they said, who was it? And I said, oh my God. They sat right there. And you'll admit I have some excuse, because it was the semi-known, fairly obscure name, Lucille Ball.
Oh, jeez.
And I felt awful. And Johnny felt better. He really felt better.
What a great life. What a great story.
Well, it has to do with the fact that you that does the show is certainly the not you of real life. Mm-hmm. You know, you go on, you sort of do your act as a talk show host, and other people I've talked to said the same thing. And actors forget lines in the play they're in on Broadway. And I used to love that. It must have happened, let's say, four times. I would say to the great Maureen Stapleton, let's say, or Eli Wallach, and they'd be telling a story, and they'd say, so I walk into the bar, and I say, what the hell do I say? They just did it. They were going to do it that night, and it had been running on it for months on Broadway. But out of the context, they're not that same person. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have a different part of your brain available to you, or something. Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, because you're playing a part, almost.
I told Brando once about being depressed and doing a show and struggling through it. And I just wanted to be home and under the bed or the rug, if you've ever had real depression. And I thought, Laurence Olivier is in the next room, and I don't give a damn. I just want to go home. Laurence Olivier. I'd already done a show with him in London. And in the middle of this thing, I thought, I don't know what the cue cards mean now. I've tried to read that one three times. And then I'd burble out something, it seemed like, and wonder... I felt that they would come over in a moment and say, well, Dick, we're going to wrap this one for now, and we'll, you know, redo it, get Lord Olivier back. And I thought, I can't do that. And I got through the 30-minute show. I was telling Brando this. He said, how did it look? I said, I've never been able to come near looking at it. And he said, well, do me a favor. Take a look at it. And I said, how do you mean? He said, just take a look at it. Tell me what you thought. So for Marlon, I had to do this favor. I was fine. I looked okay. I looked alive. Mm-hmm. I looked interested. I didn't have 8-second pauses between their speaking and mine. Next time I was in his house, actually sitting in the same place where he asked me the question, I said, by the way, about that... I looked okay. It didn't look worse than any other show. I've done shows that did, but it didn't, and I was so deep I thought they were going to haul me away. What is that? And he said, we call it automatic pilot. Yeah. You get it as an actor too. You just switch into automatic pilot or something switches you. Okay.
That is, you know, I could spend so much time talking to you guys. This has been such a pleasure.
If you could, I would tell you how Marlon broke Ron Galella, the paparazzo's jaw, 4 inches from my face in Chinatown. But we'll save that for next time.
Perfect tease. Well, we have to get you guys back on WGN Radio very soon. Thank you so much for joining us. And go and check out Ali and Cavett, The Tale of the Tapes.
Thanks a lot for having us.
Do it. You wouldn't be sorry.